Hello everyone, welcome and thank you for attending this live Implant Graphics webinar, Uncovering the Hidden Costs of Paper, sponsored by Boise. I'm Lisa Cross and I'm an Associate Director of InfoTrends Business Development Strategy Service, and myself and Debbie Pavletic, Graphics Service Manager at Briggs & Stratton Corporation, will be presenting today on this very important topic, paper. Before we get started, let me point out a few quick tips on how to make the most of today's live webinar. First, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by clicking on the Help widget at the bottom of the console, and the Help widget is marked with a question mark, or you can let us know via the Q&A box. You can also use the Q&A box to submit your questions, and you can send them in at any time. We'll be answering questions throughout today's webinar, and we really want you to get the most out of this webinar, so don't be shy. Please make sure to turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can utilize all of the widgets on the console. And to learn how to customize your experience, please click on the Tips for Attendees widget below. So let's get started. Paper is a core raw material in the printing process, and it has a big impact on the bottom line. It's the biggest individual print manufacturing cost, often accounting for 25% of revenues, and paper can account for 20 to 40% of the total cost of a print job, depending on finishing applications. More than half of implants spend over $100,000 annually on paper, according to a recent implant graphics study. It's a big cost, it's a key raw material, so selecting the right paper and taking steps to maximize its performance and reduce waste or spoilage are all critical activities for any implant operation. Selecting the right paper is the result of careful evaluation that really goes beyond price per pound. The real cost of paper is more than just the purchase price. Many of the costs associated with paper can be hidden. And I'm using the image of an iceberg here to depict key hidden costs of paper, because the thing about an iceberg is what is below the waterline. What's below that waterline, that's what's most dangerous and can sink the ship. And those hidden costs of paper can include paper handling and storage, performance on production equipment, employee safety, buying policies, ordering practices, delivery methods, and all of these factors have implications on cost. And in today's webinar, we're going to discuss those key areas that influence cost and offer some recommendations to minimize their impact on paper costs. And here's how we're going to do this, our presentation format for today. I'll talk about the topic, put it in perspective, share info trends and implant graphics research, and offer other insights from info trends' many consulting practices. And then I'll ask Debbie Pavletic to comment and share her real-world experience and ongoing management of paper and efforts to reduce its costs at Briggs & Stratton. And if you have any questions during today's webinar, please type them in the chat window at any time. We'll be monitoring questions and answering them throughout the webinar. So before we dive in to today's topics of discussion, Debbie is going to give you a brief overview of Briggs & Stratton and her role there.
Good afternoon, everyone. Briggs & Stratton is the world's largest producer of gasoline engines. If you have a lawnmower, chances are it has a Briggs & Stratton engine. I'm not saying that we're the only brand out there, but we do have a fair market share in the United States. We produce about 8 million engines per year. We manufacture a variety of outdoor power equipment like generators, pressure washers, lawnmowers, tractors, and snow throwers. Our corporate headquarters are located in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin, which is in southeastern Wisconsin. It's in the suburb of Milwaukee. Our implant facility is located about 10 miles from our corporate headquarters. We have 7 assembly facilities located in the United States. We have 1 in China and 1 in Brazil. We supply production items to all of these facilities along with administrative forms, marketing materials, and other printed items. My responsibilities include planning the strategic direction for the implant and overseeing the implant. We provide design, print, and fulfillment of printed materials to about 150 internal customers and over 75 external customers. And when I'm talking about an internal customer, that's a department. So it may be a lot more individuals than that, but that's how many departments there are. We produce about 9,000 projects per year. That equates to 750 per month, or about 35 per day. We use a print MIS system to manage all of our projects and their associated costs. We manage online ordering systems as well for 4 different categories of customers. We work with both internal and external customers for those online ordering systems. We produce over 50 million impressions per year. And that's forms through a press or a digital device. It's not 8.5 by 11 impressions. If we converted that to 8.5 by 11s, our totals would be between 150 and 175 million. We spend about $600,000 per year on paper, and we work with 4 local paper merchants in purchasing that paper. For our internal customers, we produce production items that include owner's manuals, hang tags, and instruction sheets, marketing materials that might include brochures, catalogs, point-of-purchase materials, direct mail, and then corporate materials like letterhead, envelopes, and company forms. In addition, we solicit work in our area, so we insource work from external customers, and we work with other manufacturing companies, ad agencies, and nonprofits. And our external sales equate to about 18% of our total sales.
Thank you for that, Deb, and thank you for joining us today. So now let's get started. There we go. So the first thing we're going to discuss is paper performance, and that starts with paper selection. This chart is from Implant Graphics' most recent paper survey. The publication surveys implant operations every 2 years and produces a report that's included in the print publication and is accessible online. The most recent report was published this past October. And this chart is showing respondents' answers to a question on who selects paper. And the top response was mostly managers, sometimes customers, and purchasing. Now, I'm certain that most implant managers understand paper characteristics and are experts in specifying paper. What's concerning is the back half of that statement, sometimes customers and purchasing, the back half of that top response. And when you look at the second response, mostly customers, that's also concerning. Well, why? Because specifying the right paper is critical to performance, and using the wrong paper contributes to cost. Specifying the wrong paper can be a real backbreaker to your operation in producing a job, or it can result in waste or unhappy customers, or even lead to needing to outsource a particular job. Whomever is selecting the paper needs to understand key paper criteria like brightness, opacity, weight, texture, coatings, and other considerations. Now, this isn't a webinar on paper properties, but do your staff and your customers, whomever is specifying the paper, do they understand key paper properties and what they mean in terms of the final result, that final result being a job? Now, this is important because a customer or even a member of your staff or someone in your internal organization may not know the basics. So let's look at some examples. Let's take brightness. Paper with low brightness will diminish contrast between the paper and the ink or toner, and brightness is rated on a scale of a 1 to 100. However, not all paper manufacturers use the same ISO scale. So while the numbers may not be directly, so these numbers are not directly comparable from paper maker to paper maker. And there is a rule of thumb that the higher the number, the brighter the paper. But some paper makers avoid a numerical scale and instead describe their paper with monikers such as ultra bright or super bright. And that can be confusing to a sometime or inexperienced paper specifier. And when there is ambiguity, there is always the risk of a mistake. Another area, opacity. Low opacity is highly unsuitable for double-sided printing. And the general rule of thumb here is the better, more expensive the paper grade, the higher its opacity. However, there's no specific opacity grading scheme. So though many manufacturers, you know, will describe their products as low, medium, or high opacity paper, again, there's ambiguity. In terms of weight, well, weight has, you know, many implications depending on the printing process that's used, the end product that's produced, and how that end product will be used, and how that final product will be shipped and finished. And a lot of times with shipping, if you have heavier materials, they cost more to ship. Texture is another key area, or also known as surface or smoothness. That's how the paper looks and feels, and that's dependent on a number of factors. And why this is important is because, you know, texture effects, smooth, silk, grained, pebbled, matte, or silk, these texture effects, they influence how ink or toner is deposited and spread onto the paper. All of these characteristics and more have an impact on the production of that final product. So that's why it's so important that those specifying paper understand if they're using the right paper. Now I'm going to ask Debbie a couple of questions on paper selection. So my first question to Debbie is, who selects the paper at Briggs & Stratton?
Generally, we select or recommend paper to our customers. That would be myself as well as the administrative staff and our sales team. Our customers rely on us to make the right choice for them. You know, they might have a preference for gloss, silk, or an uncoated sheet, but the brand is generally left up to us. They want to make sure that we're purchasing something that meets the quality requirements of the job as well as the cost structure that they've provided or their budget that they've given to us.
Now, I mentioned a few paper criteria that influence performance. What would you add to this discussion on paper criteria?
Well, we found right now the most important characteristics to watch is coating. Coating is becoming more and more important with increased digital production. I know, you know, a lot of papers are uncoated, but digital and coated papers is really, you know, a critical area to keep your eye on. Digital production can introduce heat that will dry the sheet and cause it to have increased cracking, especially in the finishing process. And you need to be aware of that as well. You know, there is different equipment that can handle finishing better than others with, you know, taking care of cracking. And generally, if there's more coating, there can be more cracking. So you need to test paper in your equipment to make sure that you have the best fit. I know you noted another consideration on your slide, and that was converting. It's really important to work with a source that maintains high-quality cutting operations, making sure that it's dust-free and you get a square cut, and that the paper doesn't have any, you know, major wave or curl to it. And this all may sound really basic, but these are areas that we've had to address from time to time. We have a mini web as well, and the way web rolls are wound is important as well. They need to be evenly wound and at the right tension.
Thank you. Yeah, and I just want to point out that we just picked some, you know, key criteria. There are many more, and you can debate, you know, which ones are more important than others, but I just wanted to make the point here, and I picked these criteria just to make the point that there are people that don't understand these terms, and you do not want those to be your customers. So it's very important, you know, to recognize who is buying the paper and take as many steps as possible to really educate your staff and customers or anyone in that, you know, paper specifying a supply chain on, giving them some tools to better specify paper. So the next thing that I'm going to talk about or what I want to do is just show you a proof point in terms of paper selection. Now, this is a proof point that I found while doing some research for this webinar, and this was a large university, and it spends $600,000 annually on office paper for copiers, fax machines, laser printers, and inkjet printers, and it purchases over 150 different types and sizes of papers. And what this organization found out, that 50% of their customers either overspend on paper or experience unsatisfactory results by using the wrong paper for a job. So I thought that that was kind of, you know, putting in context, you know, how big this issue can be and its importance, you know, for taking steps to make sure that from the get-go at the specification process, the right paper is being specified. And one of the tactics that this large university pursued was they created a buying guide to help their departments select the right paper, you know, order the right paper from the right suppliers, and overall tips and tricks to save money, time, and effort. And this might be something that, you know, you can create a guide for all the types of papers that are used in your organization, something that you can give to your staff or customers. Or there are many educational tools that can be found out there on paper manufacturers' websites, and many merchants and retailers offer tools and resources to guide specifications. So there are resources available. Maybe your current suppliers have such tools, but this is something that you should consider. So the next thing I want to talk about, another area to consider in paper performance, is actually using the right paper for the right process or output device. Now, this pie chart is from an InfoTrend survey of in-plant operations, and we asked respondents if they ever used offset paper in a digital printing equipment, and 78% said yes they did, and of those, 48% said they did on a regular basis. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Well, there are risks that can result in extra costs from waste and increases in time and labor when you use offset paper in a digital device, and some of those risks are, you know, the heat from the digital process may damage the surface of the paper, and that could result in poor quality or useless output. Contaminants such as paper dust or dirt may be introduced into the equipment and can result in print defects and service issues. And a grain direction might be wrong for finishing. So there are a number of risks here. So you need to understand those risks, and based on those risks, you decide if it's a good idea to actually use offset paper in a digital device. But, you know, you need to understand them. Another area to consider in performance is paper jams. Paper jams on production digital devices are likely part of your waste factor and included in your waste factor calculations. Jamming is more likely an issue of if your operation is responsible for managing your organization's office environments. While your production operators may understand proper paper storage and loading, others in your organization may not. And if a paper is responsible for jamming in your office environments, it may go unreported from others in the organization for some time. Because when you think about it, you know, what happens when a copier jams? Usually a user, you know, walks away and goes to another device or goes to an office superstore to use their device. They leave that problem for the next person who comes to use that device. And many times, you know, staff outside your production facility, you know, they don't report a problem with a specific paper. What you need to do to get them to is give them a process to report if there's a problem, because many times there aren't processes in place to give someone the opportunity to actually report that there's a jamming problem. So now I'm going to ask Debbie a question. Debbie, what's your organization's experience with paper jamming, and what steps have you taken to minimize that?
Well, I'm happy to report we don't have a significant issue with paper jamming. Our press room is environmentally controlled, and it has a humidification system in place, so I think that helps quite a bit. But we found that it's really important to test the digital paper in your equipment to ensure it'll consistently run well, you know, in the different sizes that you're going to use, as well as run through the if you have inline finishing equipment or offline finishing equipment as well. In some cases, you know, paper jams may be due to the paper rather than being an equipment issue, and you have to, you know, try to minimize that. And I think testing is a huge part of that. When we place paper in our environment as well, we have it, you know, on site for about 24 hours before we use it generally. When we're loading paper into the machine, we fan it so that there, you know, it's not a brick, you know, a solid brick. And if there is any static, it kind of helps to release some of that. And if there's a slight bend in the paper, or if we see that there might be a slight wave when taking things even out of a ream wrap or out of a box, we'll make sure that we place that curl kind of facing down, because we found in our equipment that's the way that it's going to run the most successfully. But that may be different for someone else.
Great advice. And just a couple of other solutions here on jamming issues would just be, again, client education. That's really critical in, you know, how your customers and staff use paper. I know some implant operations have posted posters near devices showing their staff how to store and load paper. That might sound really basic, but we've seen shops that don't do things like that and have problems. You also want to establish a process for reporting jams. You think that's a no-brainer, but at InfoTrends, we've seen companies that don't do that, so that when there is a problem, there's really no process. Nobody knows who to go to with that problem. And a final thing you can do there, you know, is evaluate the jam-free papers that are on the market. So now we're going to sum up this section on performance, and we're going to talk about some tips to enhance performance, and then we'll move on to our topic area. Before I sum up here, does anyone have any you know, specific questions with regard to paper performance? Someone did ask a question, what is meant by offset paper, and I don't know if you want to answer that question or not. Deb, my answer might be a little bit more basic than yours, but I would define it. Go ahead.
Sure. I mean, offset in the printing environment is printing on an offset piece of equipment, but we refer to the paper that we run through our web press as offset. So whether or not that's an accurate term or not, I'm not sure, but we consider it, or we call the web rolls that we're running uncoated offset paper.
Yeah, there's not a lot of consistency sometimes in terminology, but when I use the word offset paper, I mean any type of paper, substrate, stock, anything that's optimized for use in an offset printing device, whether that be, you know, sheet-fed offset, web-fed offset, non-heat set, you know, an offset process. Okay, so back to our topic areas, or our tips for evaluating performance. Really, it's always important to establish guidelines, instructions, and best practices for staff and customers who are specifying papers and dealing with other key tasks with related to, you know, paper usage. In those guidelines, you really need to define, you know, what needs to be done, what's the process, and who's accountable. And this all might sound very basic to you, and maybe you're doing this, and that's great, but we see a lot of operations that don't do things like this. Your guidelines need to cover, you know, many things from paper specifications to ordering instructions to purchasing approvals to who to interact with in a supplier organization, and even to, you know, what are, you know, best practices for bidding procedures. Like, for example, you know, asking a manufacturer in an RFP to include paper for you to test if you've never used that paper before. What it comes down to is when you don't have guidelines, there isn't consistency in behavior, so everybody does something differently, and we see this all the time. And furthermore, when staff or customers don't know what to do, they ask others, and they start tracking down an answer, and tracking down answers consumes time. And even though you've invested time in looking for that answer, you still might not even get that required answer. So offering training to staff and even customers on paper performance and specifying the right paper so that performance is enhanced is really important. And I know of implants that have turned to their merchants and use their merchants' specification rep or spec rep to teach staff and customers how to specify papers. And it's also important to provide, some type of educational materials, to support guidelines and training efforts. And these can come in a number of forms, from posters to online tools. So now we're going to actually talk about purchasing. So with purchasing, I wanted to start out with this simple graphic of the paper supply chain. And most of you are likely familiar with how this works, and I'm just including it to illustrate where most of you likely purchase paper, and that's through a merchant or retail channel, and why I have a blue star over those two channels. And that channel can include paper merchants, distributors, dealers, brokers, merchant stores, office supply stores, online channels, or even through equipment vendors. Now, InfoTrends has conducted ongoing research on the merchant channel, and this pie chart is from one of our surveys. We asked merchants what percentage of their total business was from companies of the following sizes. And you can see that firms of all sizes buy paper from merchants, ranging from businesses under 20 employees to large enterprises with over 1,000 employees. Paper merchants are an important channel in the paper industry, and while there are a few national and international merchant players, most are really regional and local in scope. And merchants, are a critical link between the mills and end customers, offering personalized service that's, often valued by customers. And nowadays, you can find customer service too in that, retail space as well. Not just merchants, but customer service is intensifying in terms of paper distribution. Now, this chart is from the same paper merchant study, and we found that implants are key customers for merchants. They were number two on the list when we asked merchants to identify who are their customers. Okay. Merchants are a top purchasing channel for implants. This is from InfoTrends study where we surveyed implant operations on paper usage, and 63% of implant respondents said they purchased their paper via a merchant. That was their top response. Beyond merchants, a quarter of implants purchased paper online, and 14% purchased from office supplies wholesalers. Now, an implant might use office supply wholesalers to consolidate purchases and obtain preferred pricing because parent organizations need other items sold by office supply wholesalers. In more digitally copy shop oriented implants like a CDR, the paper is often the same or similar to what's used in an office environment. Larger implants may use different paper vendors for their production paper versus their offset paper. They may use an office superstore or office supplier for office paper, but then use a commercial print-oriented type supplier for production paper if they have a digital color and run more commercial applications like marketing collateral, direct mail, et cetera, where they need larger coated sheets. So now I have a question to Debbie. I've talked a little bit about purchasing. So, Debbie, where do you purchase your paper, and why those vendors?
Well, we purchase all of our paper through merchants. There are four main merchants in our area that we work with, soon to be three. But we use the paper merchants because they really provide a value add for us. They'll help us in specing paper. They'll introduce new shades of paper to us or new products to us or consolidation in paper catalogs to us. We actually have one merchant that monitors and maintains an entire paper library for us to review, which is critical because of all of the changes that happen with paper throughout the year. It's amazing to see what changes from 1 year to the next. But they'll produce dummy sample books for us on projects when we're using specialized paper. They'll help us identify brands or even competitive brands to something that we're looking at, and then also offer some lower cost options if we have budget issues on projects. They also help us with any paper quality issues that we may have. They'll work with us to troubleshoot what the cause is and then help us to obtain solutions. Sometimes that's working between us and even a paper mill. We work with the vendors, these vendors and these merchants, because they're all very responsive to our inquiries, and they're always there for us when we need them. So we really appreciate their assistance and the value that they add to the purchasing process.
Great. Now, this is a top 10 list of the types of papers that are purchased by implants, and this is from Implant Graphics' most recent paper survey, and I'm showing it to highlight the breadth of papers that implant operations purchase. And question for Deb, what are the most common papers that you use in your operation?
Well, because we have a mini web and we have a fairly extensive digital production area for monochrome or one color pieces, the majority of the paper that we purchased would fall in the uncoated offset area. This also would like include the copier type paper too. We always look for a source that maintains consistent quality and can offer very competitive costs to us. So, you know, these papers may seem more of a commodity to the marketplace, but, you know, we're gonna make sure that we're getting a quality product at the most competitive cost possible. If something isn't going to run consistently through your equipment, the cost of that paper isn't going to be as attractive because of the downtime that you're going to have on that piece of equipment. We also use coated papers for the production of marketing materials. We've noticed, too, that paper in the past, a lot of people preferred the gloss coatings, but we're really seeing trends recently where silk or dull is becoming more of a preferred coating or kind of a change in the industry.
Okay, now we're going to just talk a little bit more about purchasing. So in terms of digital paper grades purchased, this is from InfoTrend's survey of implants on paper usage, and respondents were asked how their volume of paper was distributed across grades, and 54% of respondents indicated that, you know, commodity or uncoated paper was the primary grade they used, and premium uncoated was number two at 22%. Now, InfoTrend's research indicates that, you know, most paper is purchased without contracts. This is from InfoTrend's survey of paper merchants, and we asked merchants, you know, what percentage of customers have paper purchasing contracts, and that average was 17%. Merchants commonly offer paper purchasing contracts, but can vary by, you know, size of merchants, local and more presumably more smaller merchants are least likely to have to offer paper purchasing contracts, while larger merchants indicated to us that they're more likely to have customers with contracts. And why this is important is because if you don't have a paper supply contract, you may want to consider one. Probably only the smallest of shops fail to generate enough volume to make this an appropriate choice. But having a contract provides you with a consistent and available supply of specific papers and the ability to negotiate and lock down a price. Paper prices can be volatile and unpredictable, but price can be locked down in a contract so that that can help you manage cost in addition to fulfilling demand. Most suppliers offer contracts that cover multiple grades, And some of those, you know, key benefits from having a purchasing contract for paper include, you know, contract savings can be significant, availability of paper, stabilization of pricing, and the ability to purchase across multiple paper grades. So now I have a question for Debbie. Does Briggs & Stratton buy paper on contract? And what benefits have you experienced from paper purchasing contracts?
Yes, for the high volume paper, we do purchase on contract. We also have contracts on commonly and consistently used items. And the contracts that we have, the largest contracts we have, are for uncoated papers. We'll commit to specific quantities in a certain time period. Actually, our vendor will order it. They'll hold all of the stock for us because they're going to order in that larger quantity, and they'll ship to us based on what our needs are. So, this allows us to reduce our material handling costs and you know, the internal inventory processing costs. It also allows us to provide consistent pricing to our customers because those contracts will be for a specific or set period of time. And it has saved us the cost of price increases that can occur from time to time, too.
Okay, now contracts are one element of buying efficiently. Another is how you order paper. This is from InfoTrend Survey of Implant Operations, and we asked, what was the primary method for ordering paper products? The top response was the telephone, followed by supplier's website and email. Some implants were still faxing orders. And one to watch here on this pie chart is automated ordering through an MIS system, and we'll talk about that a little bit later in the presentation. But for now, I have a question for Debbie. What are the common methods of paper ordering at Briggs & Stratton, and why do you use each?
Okay, well, we order via all the means, basically, phone, email, online ordering systems, and fax. Our preferred method, though, is ordering via online ordering systems. The reason for that is this is the most efficient method. It takes about a minute for an admin person to order via an online system. It can take 2 to 3 minutes to create an email or a fax and send that on. And if you're, you know, processing a phone order, that can be 5 minutes or more. The less time it takes to process an order, the more time, you know, they'll have to process project requests. So we want to keep them as efficient as possible. Having customized ordering lists and online ordering system makes it really easy for our admin staff to process an order in a short period of time. The reason we would use a fax or an email would be based on time. We may not have an item in an online ordering site, or it may be difficult to locate, so we'll process orders that way. On occasion, we'll do phone orders, and this could be for specialized or more complex requests. It may be for a paper that's different from most of the standards we use. There may be a need, there may need to be a conversation, like with a merchant, to assist in specing the paper, so during that process, that order might be placed. We did have one question from an attendee, and they wanted to know how much inventory we hold and how that has changed over the course of the last 10 years. Each month we hold about $90,000 worth of inventory of paper, and that isn't a significant amount for us, but I will tell you that that is probably 50% of what we used to inventory 10 years ago. The majority of our paper that we have on hand is for web printing, so there's a significant amount of rolls on our floor because of the usage of that, as well as in our monochrome or digital copy area where we're using mainly 11 by 17 20-pound sheets. So, again, it has significantly decreased over the course of the last 10 years.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about inventory trends in the next section, just so you all know.
Okay.
Now, there was another question, and Deb, I'm not. Maybe you can help answer this. Someone wanted to know what's the recommended term of a paper contract. Is there within your organization a best practice for what should be the term of a paper contract?
Well, I will say if I had my way, I would put a term in place for a year, but most mills won't commit to that length of time. I think it's fairly safe to say you can get contracts in the range of probably 6 months for like web rolls. If you're working on office paper, copy paper, and coated papers, the terms are going to be a little bit different. I know on coated papers, I've been able to get contracts that have lasted up to a year, but generally in more of those commodity grades, because they're influenced by fluctuations in the marketplace, most mills will only commit up to about 6 months.
Yeah, that's about what we found in our research, that they'll commit to about, 6 months, and that's about it, because there's just too much variation and variability in terms of, what can affect pricing and availability.
Yeah.
Okay, so the next thing we're going to talk about is online ordering. A lot of advances in technology has given implants, greater access to information and product information and product availability from distributors. A lot of paper suppliers are offering e-commerce platforms that offer real-time inventory availability, access to visibility to real-time pricing, reorder templates, and really robust ordering catalogs. All of us on the line are probably really familiar with just the value that, online ordering enables in terms of just-in-time delivery of paper. Just-in-time delivery saves storage space, and for most implant operations, floor space is a very limited resource. It's an operation constraint, so receiving paper as needed or on a just-in-time basis is a plus. Online ordering can help reduce or just-in-time delivery can help, reduce waste in the form of unused paper because you order the right amount. A lot of runs are getting shorter, so ordering what's needed minimizes paper waste. And, ordering just-in-time really reduces the amount of capital tied up in a paper inventory. And it also, offers quick 24/7 web-based access to anything you might need. And last thing here is, the ability to really integrate with a print MIS system, to integrate your print MIS system with your paper provider's platform. That can help streamline estimating and purchasing. And we're going to talk a little bit more in a minute, but, we do see that starting to happen. But I have a question for Deb. What are the benefits that Briggs & Stratton has gained through online ordering?
Well, definitely less time for the admin staff to process an order and to be able to maintain lower costs based on some of the contracts that we have set up and the customized listings of paper that we have online with them. It also offers the, like you had mentioned, the opportunity to hold less inventory and have just-in-time availability of that paper. And then for high-volume papers, again, we negotiate those prices where increases and decreases are based on pulp and paper price indexes, and those items are always included on that customized ordering area. So it's a much easier process for that admin staff to process an order, and in turn that saves us cost.
Okay, so does anyone have any questions on purchasing or any additional questions on purchasing in any of the topics that we just discussed? Okay, I'm going to move along then to talking about inventory. Now, this slide is showing a comparison between two implant graphics paper surveys on the topic of how much paper implants have in inventory. And you can see that implants are reducing inventories. The pie chart on the left is from 2011, and the one on the right is from 2013. And you can see that there's a shift to reducing inventories where more firms are carrying 2 weeks' worth of paper and minimizing, larger quantities. And that 2 weeks' worth of paper was the top response. in the most recent survey, and when you compare it to the last study, that's a 40% increase in respondents holding 2 weeks of paper, or a 20% annual increase because this study was done every 2 years, so you would need to divide the 40 by two. So why reduce inventory? Well, the simple answer is higher inventory equal higher expenses. You know, beyond inventory carrying costs, and those can include cost of capital and storage costs. There are also costs in managing more materials, and in managing more materials, that's, you know, more staff time and resources and keeping track of materials, moving materials, and making sure that materials are properly stored. So I know that you gave a great answer earlier, Debbie, on inventory, but I'm wondering if there's, you know, something you might want to add here on why reduce inventory, and if not, I will move on.
Well, I mean, carrying inventory and the associated cost for storing and handling that inventory can actually equate to an additional 18% for your cost of paper when you take into consideration the amount of time you're processing it, as well as the cost of carrying that capital on your books. And that's a significant number, especially in a competitive marketplace. So lower inventory is, again, going to equate to lower cost structure for your operation. There was one question that came in regards to delivery of paper and the costs associated with that. There was one attendee who had mentioned that they have from time to time had to pay delivery fees and wanted to know if we pay delivery fees. We do purchase a significant amount of paper, so for us there are no delivery fees associated with paper.
Okay, so automated inventory. We're going to talk about that next. And, you know, automated inventory is really a more efficient and better way to manage inventory and control paper delivery. Automation can reduce staff time, and I recently interviewed a large implant operation, and the person I spoke with told me that they cut staff time from one full-time person managing inventory to a half a person managing inventory through automation tools. Now, operations that track and order paper more manually not only consume staff time, but add variability to the process, which can lead to errors or, you know, the wrong product being delivered. And some of the benefits that we're seeing in terms of automating inventory include, you know, having visibility on what's on hand or ordered, preventing, you know, product shortages, just-in-time delivery, and we talked about some of those benefits earlier, the ability to balance inventory levels with customer needs, minimizing, you know, working capital through just-in-time delivery, and a lot of inventory management programs also keep staff, you know, up to date and really provide an accurate measure of stock levels. Because stocking paper that you already have is costly, but we found that that often occurs. Larger implant operations may have robust MIS tools that track usage and have built-in minimums that once that minimum is reached, sends a notification to someone to order more of that paper or sends an order request directly to the supplier. Now, paper suppliers have many capabilities to integrate with purchasing departments today to facilitate automatic orders for customers. But, you know, buyers do need to have infrastructure in place before that automation can occur. Larger implants are pushing paper providers to automate inventory order management because they really want to link their ordering to inventory management and billing systems. And what's happening because of that is that they're getting better scheduled deliveries, time reductions, better more efficiency in storage, and reducing costs. And what's happened is as a result of a lot of these larger printing organizations, you know, working with their paper suppliers to develop criteria and interfaces and processes. This is develop those and to really, you know, push these smooth implementations. What's happened is there's a trickle down or trickle out effect, you know, where everyone is beginning to benefit because suppliers really want to work to leverage all of their efforts in serving customers and all their efforts in building, you know, these tools so that they can gain a competitive advantage and more customers by offering these types of tools. And we're starting to see more of these types of tools become available. Delivery time is important, and we're seeing a lot of merchants are offering a same-day delivery. This is from InfoTrends, a survey of implant operations, and same-day delivery for a merchant. What that means for you would be next-day delivery or in the next or next several days. And other things of note, you know, on this graphic, you know, beyond some of those services that merchants are offering beyond a same-day delivery of note here is the online ordering and EDI capability, and EDI is electronic data interchange, and that is a standard for being able to facilitate e-commerce. Another key thing on this chart is service is education and customer training. So overall, this chart is indicating that implants are merchants are offering implants, a variety of services to help differentiate themselves. And we're seeing other, paper sellers take a similar approach. So I have a question for Debbie. What services do paper suppliers, offer, and how do you use these services, how do these services align with meeting your demands and help you to reduce paper costs?
Well, most of our merchants will offer next-day delivery. It's not uncommon that we have to order something at 5 o'clock in the afternoon for delivery the following morning for production that following day. And if we couldn't get that paper, we may not get the job. So that would be lost sale and lost revenue for us. And being able to get next-day delivery has allowed us to reduce inventory. If we can get it the next day, we don't need to hold it in inventory for future jobs, and we can order the exact amount needed. Our merchants also offer cutting to us. We will offer or order paper in cut sizes so that when it comes in, it can go directly to the press and there's less material handling inside. Our merchants, I mentioned, they also maintain a paper library for us. They assist in specking paper for us. They provide samples to us, and they'll even make sample books for us on certain projects. This allows us to provide a really high level of customer service to our customers as well. So, answering all of their questions and educating our customer and educating them through their buying process really strengthens our relationship with them and helps us to gain sales.
Great. And there's a question that came in on a little bit different topic. Do you order customer sheets for your offset presses, or do you order only standard size sheets?
In our operation, I have found that we just order standard sheet sizes. If someone is printing something in extremely high volume, I believe that it would be more cost effective for you to buy it in a custom sheet size. I've tested that, and it hasn't worked in our operation, but our volumes may not have been high enough to warrant that.
Great, thank you. So now we're going to move on to our last topic of today's webinar, and that's handling and storage. Now, we've talked about constraints of space in implant operations and benefits of just-in-time inventory, and what I'm showing you in this chart, I think, is a signal that implant operations are increasing ordering efficiency. What this is, I'm showing a comparison between Implant Graphics most recent paper survey, and its paper survey in 2011. And the top four responses that you're seeing on this chart, this is from the most recent study, and the question was on where implants stored paper. And the arrows are showing how that changed from the last study. So you can see that, you know, more implants are storing paper in production areas, and to me that's an indication of efficient ordering and inventory manage and better storage practices, you know, storing paper in the environment where you're going to use it, and we'll talk about that shortly. So Debbie, I have a question for you. Where do you store paper, and what recommendations would you offer other implant operations in terms of paper storage?
Well, we store our paper as close to the press as possible. So in your slide, the floor of the production area and shelves in the production area is where all of our paper would be stored. It's in the same environment. The temperature and humidity is the same as where the equipment is, and it also helps us to keep those handling costs low. Having paper in close proximity to the equipment allows their operators to manage pretty much their own inventory and move the paper to their press as needed, so we don't need additional staff to do that.
Great. Now let's talk a little bit about storage and handling. Here's just some handling and storage considerations that we've come up with at InfoTrends, and I'm going to ask Deb to comment as well. But if possible, you really want to, you know, store paper in the actual production area for 24 hours before the job. Some recommend 48 hours, and the reason that you want to have the paper in the actual production environment is because you want to acclimate the paper to room temperature and humidity of your production environment. You really want the paper to have enough time, you know, to adjust and adapt to new climate conditions. Next tip here, if you're storing in a stockroom or warehouse, you really need to make sure that the temperature is the same as in the press room. Paper is really sensitive to environmental conditions, and you really don't want an issue when you run the job. Excessive moisture can really be public enemy number one for paper, and a number of sheets, I think I read a number once, millions of sheets are discarded each year due to humidity, temperature, and moisture exposure. How you store the paper is important. You want to keep media flat, otherwise it might bend and curl. It's always best to keep paper in cartons until it's time to use it, because you really want to protect it again from moisture and temperature fluctuations. After you're done using paper, it's important to reseal cartons after use. Run lengths are getting shorter, so you may have leftover papers. So how you store that open inventory is important in minimizing waste and its associated cost. It's really important to keep your storage area clean. I find that kind of ironic that I have to say that. Not so much ironic, but you would think that's a no-brainer, but it isn't. So it needs to be listed on this chart. Make sure that your staff are trained and they know how to handle paper properly. And one of the recommendations that we often offer our customers in terms of storage and handling considerations is to, you know, do some type of audit or assessment of, you know, what your operation storage, some type of assessment or evaluation of your storage and handling procedures, because you might be surprised at what you find out, and you really can't fix a problem if you don't know that it exists. So now I have a question for Debbie. Are there any additional tips that you'd add to our list here that you could expand on?
I would just suggest having a humidity controlled or environmentally controlled environment. In our area, we have to deal with the heating season, and static is really kind of a demon in the printing process. So having that humidity control is really important.
Great. And we're getting close to the top of the hour, so I'm going to move a little bit faster. One of the last things that we're going to talk about here is, you know, the role that paper packaging plays in storage and handling. And what you're seeing here, this is a schematic of a reamless paper delivery system, and it can increase efficiency and storage and handling. Reamless paper boxes generally hold between 2,000 to 2,500 sheets. And these are papers that are generally used for high-speed copiers, plain paper faxes, and laser printers. The benefits of these types of systems is that they're easier to open, they're easier to lift, and they're easier to move than traditional paper cartons. Paper is accessible from all four sides, and you don't have to remove ream wrappers. Because of the easy access and you don't have to remove ream wrappers, this really enables a faster paper loading, and I've seen some estimates where these types of devices can save 10 minutes for every 15 minutes spent on paper loading, and it also has a reclosable box. So this allows you to take what you need and then protects the unused paper from moisture and dust. So one last question here for you, Deb. Do you buy or are you considering buying reamless papers?
We've always kind of kept a pulse on the reamless papers. We've calculated that it could save up to an hour per day per machine for each 3,000 sheets of 20-pound bond. And I use a 3,000 figure because that's what most of our machines' drawers have the capacity of. It also eliminates the need for, you know, large recycle containers for ream wraps and, you know, the subsequent material handling for recycling. In one shift, you may need to unwrap 125 to 150 reams per machine, and that's a lot of wasted time and wraps. So you need to also consider the ergonomics for your operator when they need to unwrap all of those reams.
And speaking of ergonomics, one important consideration to think about with paper handling is just the people side of paper, that ergonomics are important and that, you know, ergonomic-type injuries account for about 29% of all workplace injuries. So, you know, anything you can do in terms of your storage and handling practices that look out for employees and minimize injuries is a plus. And we're at the top of the hour, so are there any other questions? Let's see. Sorry, I lost my question box there. Deb, there's a question on how much of your sheet-fed paper comes in on skids versus boxes where it has to be unpacked and loaded.
I would say it's probably 50-50. When we're buying in high volume, we're buying on skids. Some of those skids, though, contain boxes, so it's kind of hard to say. And anything that we're printing in our digital copy center is all coming in boxes on skids, so it's probably about 50%.
Great. And just one quick thing before we wrap up. Just keep in mind that our recommendations here today that, you know, when it comes to specifying paper, you know, it's really all about performance. You really need to take action to select the right paper for the job and process in advance of printing it. You can work with your suppliers to do so. Really evaluate your current purchasing practices and policies and what's available from your vendors to approve this, and educate and train staff and customers on paper best practices. Paper costs go beyond price, so really take the time to uncover those hidden costs and take action to reduce or eliminate them. And remember, I started this presentation by showing a graphic of an iceberg. It's those hidden costs, what's below the waterline, that can do the most damage, and in this case, increase your costs. If anyone has any additional questions, please feel free to reach out to me, and I'll get them answered for you. And my email address is lisa.cross@infotrends.com. And final thing that I would like to do today is thank Debbie Pavletic for joining us and sharing her experience and insights. She did a wonderful job. I know I learned a great deal from everything that Debbie said today, and I hope all of you did as well. On behalf of Implant Graphics in Boise, I want to thank you for attending today's webinar. Please be sure to check out our webinar page to get information on all of our archived and upcoming webinars. If you would, please take a few minutes to fill out a brief feedback survey that will appear on your screen next. We'd be grateful if you took a few minutes to do that, because your feedback will influence the webinars we bring to you in the future. So thank you for attending today, and I hope to see you all at the next Implant Graphics webinar.